What I wanted to go through, and the reason why I invited you around is there's been some changes, a couple of changes in Training Peaks that it's really, to me, they're marketed as planning by training stress. To me, it's a lot bigger than that. There's a whole rich new environment that is, and a lot of this I've been doing for a while in the background of spreadsheets. And I actually approach Training Peaks to actually say, you do it by volume, but really, Jim Vance and all the advanced guys are not doing it by volume anymore. They're doing it by training stress, because volume is just one parameter. Volume is the amount you do, but what that doesn't take into account is how much stress you're putting on the body. So the stress plus the volume over time is really training. And you can't plan. If you plan by volume, you're still going to have these other algorithms in the background to say how much load are you putting on a person, what's the recovery time. So if you there's some simple algorithms you can apply to actually monitor stress and make sure you get the recovery. So it's all about what we call minimal dose, effective dose to actually get the most out of the body, recognizing that there's some things that we need to be doing outside of training. Life isn't training. We've got to be getting enough sleep. We've got work, we've got families, so we're number four on the priority list. And I see it in that order. Sleep first. You're not getting 8 hours sleep, you're probably not going to be effective, especially if you train. If a lot of people say, oh, I can get by 6 hours, that's plenty. You can't. There's something missing. There's something you're going to be battling. It doesn't work like that. 7, 30 hours is probably enough for a standard person. If you're doing 10 plus hours a week, it's not enough. You're probably going to need 8. The pros, when they're getting up into the 30 hours, guaranteed they're sleeping 10 hours a day. They're doing 8 hours at night and they're getting probably 2 hours somewhere during the day. Might be a doze, might get less sleep, but they're getting the recovery in. So what this comes down to, why we really focus on training stress, is the balance between recovery and stress for the time you can afford to train on. It's getting the minimum effective dose to get you where you need to be, understanding the hours you've got to train, and making sure we're effective and use every minute we're training for the right purpose. Getting rid of waste, basically. So again, I just can't. I've been banging on it for a while in my blog posts and everything. Sleep is the priority, all right? We've got to honor life priorities, because anything, if we're not honoring our life priorities, our family, if we're not there for them, we're not doing our chores, stress builds up. It's on the back of your mind. Your training becomes less. Something's going to break. It's not unsustainable. It's not going to be effective. The other big thing is to maximize adaptation. Anything we do in terms of stress and training is two things: the stress plus recovery. All right? What happens if we apply stress? We actually get weaker. We recover, basically supercompensate, and you actually get stronger. The body says, I don't want to go through that again. It'll adapt to give you more resilience for the next time you do that. So if you're not getting a recovery, you don't get stronger. So maximizing adaptations means we've got to hit target in a training session exactly what we want to target, and then make sure we get the appropriate recovery to super compensate so we're actually stronger. Right. We can go into cycles, almost a negative cycle, and it can be planned that you're actually getting slowly into deficit and then have a good break and you super compensate. So you don't have to do it every single training session come up. You can slowly get into a spiral to actually get overload, and then have a good recovery to actually super concentrate and finish up stronger. So there's different models. You can have a short repeat model, super concentrate and very sharp, or you can actually a long do a couple of cycles and then recover. Also, you have what we call micro cycles, just a cycle which is like your week, and then you have your macro cycles. So micro cycles is basically in the day. Make sure you get the recovery in the day, so the next session you hit, you're fully recovered, you can hit it. Basically, a normal cycle is around about a week, where you have your big weekends or something. You're making sure within the week there's some recovery built in, so the time you actually build up again, you actually can perform. And then you get your what you call your broader cycle, which is your periodization. Might be 3 weeks, might be 4 weeks, depending on your age and your recovery time. So if it's 4 weeks, generally you go three, where you're loading up, and then the fourth week is a recovery week, which you make sure your aerobic system recovers, where your high intensity is generally a shorter cycle you're recovering on. So it's getting that recovery right. And what this is all about is understanding the stress you're actually putting on the body, calculating that, getting the metrics in, so that when you actually recover, you know how much to recover to get it back. All right. The other thing it does is, this whole thing is understanding the stress, make sure you're not getting too far into deficit, and then that's when the injuries and the illness start happening. So it's about health. You keep overloading, you are going to get sick. And that overload may not just be this training stuff. It's the combination of life. Yeah, I can't stress that more. It's the lack of sleep. It's the stress at work, the politics, the bullshit that goes on at work, and there's lots of it. And you bring that home, and then you get into a session, and you're just constantly overloading. Body doesn't understand the difference between political stress from work and a six-hour ride. That's a stress to the body. So when you start getting the symptoms, the fatigue symptoms, the cold, constant cold, and things like that, you've got to look inside and actually say, where's the stress coming from? How do I deal with it? And make sure you get the recoveries. We apply the same rules around training and recovery to any type of exercise. It may be physical, which we do, and this is what this is all about, but it's also mental. If you want to get, you want to study and become effective study, you've got to go through the same cycles. At work, when you fall on at work and it's an exceptional period, got to hit target, you've got to take a break and recover at the end of it, and you will become more effective by doing that. But if you just keep burning the candle at work every single day for months at a time, you'll burn out. It's the same model, no difference. Recovery is a lot of things. There's obviously sleep, there's rest. It's a couple of other things. Nutrition, getting effective nutrition at the right time. So there's big focus in the past on carbohydrates and protein were everything. It's becoming clearer, and I'm not going to go deep into that, but you've got to be careful with carbs and protein as to when you have them. Have them far away from training is not effective. As you're not using glycogen in your every day when you rested. Therefore, what happens is if you've got enough glycogen in your body, it will just convert it straight to fat. I don't need this. And it will make you hungry as well because it shoots up your insulin. Whereas if you have it after training or before training, it's a lot more effective. Same as protein. If you have protein and your body doesn't actually need it, it converts it straight into basically glycogen and turns it into the same way as sugar anyway. So having the right doses of protein, right doses of carb at the right time is important. So I know there's a lot of fad labels about, low carb, high fat, which I've subscribed to, as long as it's just used sensibly. The primal diets, which I've studied, and it's all great, but you've got to be practical because they're all structured on a normal person who's probably doing between 2.5 and 5 hours exercise a week, which is seen as the healthy dose. If you choose not to do a healthy dose, because let's put it, Iron Man and these things are not healthy. No. But then, a lot of things in life aren't healthy. Working 5 days a week, 40 hours a week is not healthy. We're not built to do that, but we do it because we need the income. There's a lot of things we do that aren't healthy. And so I'm not saying right off, don't do Iron Man, it's bad for you, because on the whole, it's probably good for you. If you do it right, if you train right and make sure you get the right recoveries and you don't push yourself into chronic intensity all the time. So really nutrition, you just need to structure it right. So it's not about going low carb or no carb or no protein. And it's just about probably we still have too much. Most athletes will have too many carbs and too much protein. And if you do have them, when you do have them, have them at the right time. If you go to Noosa, even Ironman, look how many people are really, for the amount of training to do, they shouldn't be the size they are. And that's because what they're eating is not in balance with what they're doing. And really, yeah, too many carbs causes inflammation in the body, stops recovery. That's the bottom line. There's so many studies done on it, it's true. The other thing is just, yeah, as I said, watch life stress. Don't ignore it. It's not physical, mental, it's not separate. It's the same. So, as I say, yeah, in terms of volume, what we're talking about is training volume, training pressures. Volume has got to be balanced out. It's the last equation. When you take away sleep, take away work time, take away family time, what's left? Take away fun time. You've got to have fun sometime. What's left is your training time. And it's probably a small component. And it's worth doing the calculation to actually see how many hours a week do I really have. And obviously, coming up to a big race like Busselton, you're going to invest and can push the balance for a while, but you've got to bring it back. Otherwise, it's not sustainable. You will get stress, and you will get probably get ill or get it. It's unsustainable. And you've got to take breaks. So that's all about a lot about recovery there, making sure we understand recovery is essential around it. The other side of the equation is intensity. All right, so it's training stresses, it's training is intensity versus recovery, is how to actually balance out intensity in your training. And there's no one answer for that. It really does depend, one, what your objectives is, what type of race, what's the distance, what's the time of your race, your duration of the race, versus how that race actually plays out in terms of where you're actually going to invest. I mean, Gary's scenario is very different from ours. He's going to do a couple of hours on the bike and then still have to have it in his legs to do a damn big sprint at the end. Yeah, probably a good push for the last 15 minutes and then absolute sprint at the end. We don't have to do that. As you know, an Ironman, we just plod along until we get to the finish line. Might be a little bit of a push, but it's not an intensity. So his training, he has to do a lot of force training, because if he goes for 2 hours on the bike and then suddenly asked to push with the training we do, he might as well not go around. He's going to be at the back of the pack because he hasn't invested in the force. So his type of training will be very different to ours. We'd rather balance out and make sure we consume that energy, invest more on the lower intensities, because and the durability, and not necessarily hold anything for the end, and maximize our training on what we're good at, which is the TT, where Gary needs to. And that's just one example. So and likewise, if you're focusing on sprint and Olympic, you have to have a high intensity level. You have to be able to endure that. Doesn't mean you can't do. Where is it? All right. That is a guy who's been training for 70.3. What we see here is he starts off, this is just a training run at what I call MAF pace. It's running at his aerobic threshold. So it's 180 minus age. MAF is basically your aerobic, what we call the aerobic threshold, Phil Maffetone's formula. It's exactly 180 minus your age, and it gives you, and it's really a calculated, probably what you're at your age, what it is. You can do a test, a METS test, that gives you the precise VT1, which is the aerobic threshold. But it's quite safe to actually train to this, because this is normally lower than your VT1. I have the rare occasions where it's higher. I think, who is it, Gail Young? Gail Young's the other way around. You get a few people the other way around for some reason. But MAF is quite a general page. So 180 minus your age is that heart rate, and you should train for aerobic fitness below that. And it should be 80% of your volume. So I really push this hard at most of my athletes, and the ones that don't listen to that, I see don't make the gains. If you cheat that one, your efficiency does not improve. Now you can see this guy, sent him on a MAF test. This is a test. You actually see what happens as he goes along, he's been really, really disciplined in his run. It was done obviously on a lap course, nice and flat, which is the way we should do it, not without hills. His heart rate, he kept to his heart rate, his cadence is pretty much flat. His pace slowly disappears. All right. There's a number here called PA heart rate. So that's pace per heart rate. Seeing this as flat course, we can monitor that. If that falls below 7%, he's not fit enough to do the distance without slowing down. Full stop. Seven. So I like on a race conditions that between 5 and 7%. It means you've really pushed it and you utilize what you have in you. If it's more than 7%, generally you're not fit enough for the distance. So I'm not going to invest this guy in doing durability or force or speed training at all until that number moves within 7%. Because he's never going to be able to use it. If he uses his anaerobic capacity above his threshold here, what's going to happen is that's going to go down even further because he'll burn out. All right, so it's really understanding those numbers. So effective. The other thing is the efficiency. So that's basically his pace over heart rate. Same for the bike. We can do that as well. But really what we're looking at the numbers and saying, how fit are you in aerobic? Once you're aerobically fit, then we look at how far, what's your durability under a bit of pressure? And then when we get that right, once we get that efficiency number up, we start focusing on power, speed, really intense hill work, investing more on that. Because there's no use investing in speed if you can't hold a pace at your aerobic threshold. So it's really understanding the numbers. Any questions on that? Because I'm just going to go through, because I'm starting to use some terms now that might be a bit foreign. Okay, so that's the performance, what we call a performance management chart, which has, so I'll just refer to some of those on the terms there. CTL. CTL is what we call a critical training load. So it's really what we call the fitness line. It's based on the average training stress over the last 42 days. That's a long period of time. As you train, you accumulate fitness. So 42 days, 7 weeks is basically seen as six weeks is probably the time that you can accumulate a decent amount that you're not going to lose. It's basically almost your base, right? So it's your fitness.
Right. So
this one here. So that's acute. That's the last 7 days it accumulates. So it'll actually show you the stress. So as you can see, it actually goes up and down. So that's really our fatigue level. So with that up, we're basically in a deficit we definitely need to recover from in the short term. The yellow is the opposite. That's a training stress balance. And I call that our readiness to race. All right. If it's right down at the bottom, we are not ready to race. We're fatigued. If we enter the race, we'll just, you'll have nothing. All right? Yeah. What's the ideal is when we get up to race day, we should be at about plus 15. So the reason why it's plus 15 and no higher is that we don't want to lose too much fitness coming into a race. So if we actually drop down and we actually get that up into a 30, so we're really ready to race, the fitness has dropped by that stage. So you're not going to perform as well. It's getting that right balance. We should be positive, but not too positive. So 10 and 15% is a really good range to be in. So we try and construct. So rather than taper being a case of, hey, back off, it now becomes a science. I can actually look at the train, how much have they done realistically, if they've recorded right, and then I actually set the last 2 weeks program to actually bring them to plus 15. So the last 2 weeks is quite important. And it's not no longer guesswork where, cut down a third and cut down another half and you should be good on race day. That's what we used to do. Now we're saying, hey, I want to get you to 15. Now we can actually monitor day by day. You miss a session because you're not feeling well. It dives, put a little bit more in. So guys, undisciplined, some people I know, I want to look around the room, might decide, I felt good, so I did 2 hours instead of one. Now suddenly I'm saying, well, sorry, tomorrow you don't. Yeah. So it suddenly becomes a little bit more science and we can actually get you in. So I can actually follow the training stress balance right through to race day. And if they behave themselves, get into a good thing to race. Okay. So